Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Friday, July 27, 2012. I'm Mary Sherman. We are covering 9 stories today, including drought taking its toll on the Farm Belt, superstorms striking the East, and state fair season kicking into high gear. Our top story, even with drought conditions across the Farm Belt taking a toll on crops, many farmers are still using planes to spray for disease. Do corn and soybeans still need fungicides when conditions are this dry? University of Illinois plant pathologist Carl Bradley has compiled research over the last few years and concludes spraying is probably not going to do any good.
We didn't see any kind of a benefit to using fungicides in very, very dry weather.
He says the drier the crop, the less chance there is of disease taking hold.
We just do not have the right environment for some of these foliar fungal diseases to be prevalent. And so I think it's less likely you're going to see a beneficial response when we are in this dry weather and we're going to see very low levels of diseases.
He says besides the expense of the fungicides and the cost of aerial application, there is a constant risk of drift onto neighboring crops. Hundreds of flights were canceled and almost 300,000 customers lost power as severe thunderstorms accompanied by rain, hail, and possibly derecho winds swept across the Northeast yesterday. A derecho has wind gusts of at least 58 miles per hour and leaves a swath of damage for a minimum of 240 miles. A tornado touched down in Elmira, New York, and according to storm reports, winds of 75 miles per hour, strong enough to match a Category 1 hurricane, were recorded in Ohio and Kentucky. Meanwhile, a new study finds strong summer thunderstorms that pump water high into the upper atmosphere pose a threat to the protective ozone layer over the United States, drawing one of the first links between climate change and ozone loss over populated areas. The research published in the journal Science reported that some storms sent water vapor miles into the stratosphere and showed how such events could rapidly set off ozone-destroying reactions with chemicals that remain in the atmosphere from CFCs, refrigerant gases that are now banned. And on the topic of clean air, a story out of our Montana Bureau, where a lawsuit is on the way over pollution at the Colstrip Steam Electric Station. The Sierra Club and the Montana Environmental Information Center have filed a notice of intent to sue, alleging that the coal-fired power plant is dodging Clean Air Act regulations. More from Deborah Smith.
Helena physician Dr. Robert Shepard says it's serious business because EPA research shows coal-fired power plant pollution causes deaths each year in Montana and sends hundreds to the ER for lung and heart problems.
This is simply one more example of corporations putting their financial interest ahead of the public good.
A spokesman for PPL Montana, one of the companies that owns the plant, said there is no response to the lawsuit at this point, but the Colstrip is in compliance with all regulations and has spent at least $100 million on improvements over the years. The suit claims details about improvements have never been made public and that plant upgrades have led to more air pollution.
The Department of Justice is cracking down on a North Carolina hog farm after it was discovered they violated the Clean Water Act by discharging hog waste into a stream. We get the story from Stephanie Carson.
Friedman Farms, based in Youngsville, pleaded guilty in court and will pay the money directly to the courts. And $1 million of that will be distributed to the North Carolina Coastal Land Trust for damage caused to the watershed. Director of the trust, Camilla Herlovich, says the funds will help her organization accomplish a lot for the region.
What we intend to do is preserve more than $1 million worth of property, basically leverage this money with other sources of funds, which is something that actually we have a pretty good track record of doing.
Herlovich says the money comes at a time when state funding for the land trust is dwindling because of budget cuts. The money will go towards land acquisition and conservation along streams in the Waccamaw watershed. The Southern Environmental Enforcement Network will also receive $75,000 from the fines. This is Stephanie Carson reporting.
Some hardy volunteers are working in a remote part of Southeast Oregon to make life easier for the four-legged residents of the Heart Mountain National Antelope Refuge. And it's the end of an era, as Chris Thomas reports.
People have been working in the summer months on Heart Mountain for about 2 decades to remove a few hundred miles of barbed wire fence. And this weekend, they think they'll finally be done. The wires and posts are left over from days when cattle grazed in the area. But refuge manager Jeff Mackey says they've been a hazard to antelope.
They're here on the summer range, so they need to be able to move off the refuge in winter, when our conditions up here are just much too harsh for them, and we removed the fence just to allow these animals to move freely across the refuge where they want to for feed and water.
As nimble as antelope are, they don't jump over fences, they go under them and sometimes get caught. Mackie says the fence removal also helps people enjoy the area. Heart Mountain is one of the only wildlife refuges that welcomes overnight camping.
That report from Chris Thomas. It's the season for state fairs, and at the Ohio State Fair this weekend, there's more than just food, games, and rides. Ohioans will also have a chance to make their voices heard in the debate about the future of Social Security and Medicare. AARP Ohio has what it calls a listening post right on the midway to gather people's thoughts about how to strengthen the program. AARP volunteer Virgil Reed says Americans have worked hard for these benefits, and he believes they've earned the right to know what changes politicians are considering to the programs.
We're really seeking a no-nonsense conversation about these issues. And unfortunately, when elected officials talk about the future of Social Security and Medicare, they're usually talking to each other and not to Ohioans who depend on these programs to survive.
At the listening post, surveys will be collected, and AARP will combine the results to include in its proposals to Congress after the November election. And speaking of state fairs, as part of the 22nd anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act, the Iowa State Fair and Disability Rights Iowa want to know if everyone who attends the fair is able to access everything from buildings to attractions to ATM machines. Richard Allen has more.
A questionnaire is available on the organization's website, according to Cindy Miller, Disability Rights Iowa staff attorney.
The actual survey that we're doing with the Iowa State Fair is an accessibility survey where we will be looking at buildings, restrooms, parking, those types of issues where we're specifically looking at the fair on whether it's accessible.
She says over the last 22 years, many barriers to those with disabilities have been removed, but there may be some that have yet to be changed and may not have been addressed because no one's mentioned it. I'm Richard Allen reporting.
The opening ceremony of the London Olympics is just hours away. The three-hour spectacle in the Olympic Stadium will be viewed by a global TV audience of around 1 billion people. The event begins at 9 p.m. London time, but will be taped delayed in the U.S. to air at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. Over the next 2 weeks, more than 10,000 athletes from over 200 countries are expected to compete. I'm Mary Sherman for Public News Service, member and listener-supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.